Thanks to all our listeners who made a generous investment in WMNF during our short summer membership drive. Your pledge to help us continue to expand our services to this community is truly appreciated. However, we know many of you were probably out of town on summer vacation or simply were not tuned into radio during the drive. Welcome back home, and most important, welcome back to the WMNF family. The financial support for WMNF's programs and community efforts fell short of our projected goals. Thus, your generous contribution will certainly assist us in meeting our goal. Please call 813-238-8001 or make your generous contribution by going to WMNF.org and join your friends and family members in the Tampa metro area and beyond who are committed to making a difference to our community. You can call me right now here in the studio at 813-239-9663 and I'll take your pledge. Thank you for your commitment to making WMNF the alternative voice in our community. I'm Duncan Strauss, really delighted to be bringing you another edition of Talking Animals, in which we'll discuss various aspects of vegan cooking with Roberto Martin, personal chef for Ellen DeGeneres and Portia de Rossi, and author of a new cookbook, Vegan Cooking for Carnivores. First, though, we're kicking off the show with an animal tune. This is The Temper Trap with Rabbit Hole here on Talking Animals.
Everything I've seen is falling on deaf ears. Come to get you if you make another sound. Make you an example since you're crawling home. Anyone who listens is gonna get this when the water floods down to the rabbit hole. If you think you're gonna save us now, oh, we'll shoot the messenger for talking too loud. We'll keep you on the run. We get what we want every which way you go. Stone. 'Cause anyone who lives is gonna get theirs when the water floods down. To the rabbit hole.
That was The Temper Trap with Rabbit Hole, an animal song of sorts. Ease us into today's edition of Talking Animals. My name's Duncan Strauss. Here with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. In just a few minutes, we'll be speaking with today's guest, Roberto Martin, author of the new cookbook, Vegan Cooking for Carnivores. Over 125 recipes so tasty, You won't miss the meat. Roberta also works as a personal chef for Ellen DeGeneres and Portia de Rossi. And in the cookbook, he presents more than 125 recipes, as promised, he's created for them, with the aspiration that the dishes be delicious while making vegan cooking accessible and easy for readers. We'll discuss all this and more when we chat with Roberta Martin in a few moments here on Talking Animals. And as usual, we'll also welcome your questions and comments at 813-239-9663 or by email at dj@wmnf.org. Also a bit later in the show, we'll step into the Comedy Corner, which involves animal comedy. We'll play Name That Animal Tune. The winner will receive a copy of Vegan Cooking for Carnivores. And later, of course, we'll also hear some more animal songs. Right now, though, it's time for the Animal News and Announcements segment, a look at items of interest in animal news, as well as announcements of local events on the horizon. Produced, as always, by the Talking Animals award-winning Rip and Reed News Department, our first item involves saying thank you. Thank you very much for all those who supported Talking Animals a week ago and leading up to a week ago, as we alluded to at the beginning of the show. It was a fun drive that fell a bit short of our hopes and projections, and again, if you were out of town, distracted, busy, otherwise just weren't able to participate but would like to now, we'd love to hear from you at WMNF.org, at the station office number 813-238-8001, or you can give me a call. Parts of the show I'll be able to take your pledge, a lot of parts I won't, but those other two ways are definitely easy. You can do them right now. But I want to, again, thank everybody who did pledge to Talking Animals last week. And there's a few folks I somehow neglected to thank on the air, some who would even pledge before last Wednesday. So by way of mea culpa and making things right, I want to acknowledge those people and thank them, especially if they had comments that they were hoping to have read on the air. So starting with Marilyn Weaver from Tarpon Springs, and she says, as the executive director of the League of Humane Voters Florida, I am happy to contribute to WMF to keep Talking Animals on the air. I learned so much from this interesting show and will continue to support you and hope others will do as well. And Marty Hain also donated from St. Petersburg, getting the Fabulous Crow book. Winnie and Mark Taylor donated from Tampa, and Lori Shump also donated from Tampa. So thanks one and all, and again, thanks for those, of course, that we did acknowledge and officially thank on the air last week, and we appreciate all your support, and there's still a chance to support us now, meaning WMNF, if you didn't get a chance to, by the end of our fun drive last week. Let's see what else I want to tell you. Well, periodically I mention Mark Maron and his fantastic podcast, WTF. Again, chiefly, initially, I was interviewing comedians and people related to that. And even, you know, those were always amazing conversations. He's a really, really good, gifted interviewer, a really good listener, as all good interviewers are. And but anyways, in recent months, he's kind of widened out a bit to talk with more music people. So just because Fiona Apple tickets were part of the Talking Animals exclusive thank yous last week, and we played some stuff for her new record, Stretching the Boundaries of What Constitutes an Animal Song, a piece called Werewolf, a couple times, wanted to let you know that Fiona Apple was Marin's guest on WTF this week, on Monday's podcast. So it's a pretty extraordinary conversation, and he even says he was pretty surprised by it. So anyways, great insights into the mind of someone who's really made an extraordinary new album, I think, by all accounts. And anyway, so if you have a chance, it's WTFpod.com to find out that and more about Marin's great podcast. So let's see. I also wanted to tell you that WMF is presenting the Tampa Bay Area premiere of Veducated on August 15th. At the Roosevelt 2.0. Veducated is an award-winning feature-length documentary that tracks three meat and cheese-loving New Yorkers who agree to adopt a vegan diet for 6 weeks. The film widens out to look at animal agriculture-related issues and more, but it's got a great, great tone, really light hand and nice humor, which is one of the reasons we really liked it. It's not preachy or shrill. And beyond showing the film, we're going to have a post-screening panel discussion that will address Veducated and some of the issues raised by the film. So representing viewpoints sort of across the omnivore to vegan continuum, the panelists slated to appear are Eve Prang Plews, nutritionist and host, of course, of WMF's Alternative Health Program, Isabel Tossi, chief organizer of Tampa Bay Veg Fest, coming up this year at October 13th at Okeechobee Fort Brooke Park, longtime vegan and animal rights activist, Lee Flea Courtney, WMF music director and, of course, host of Monday's It's the Music, and spoiler alert, underwent something of a transformation after seeing Veducated. Find out more about that by attending. And some guy named Duncan Strauss has muscled his way onto the panel as well. So anyways, that's again August 15th at the Roosevelt 2.0. $9. Covers the whole shebang, the screening and the panel. So go to WNF.org for tickets, more information, or call Miss Julie here at the station during business hours, 813-238-8001. On to animal news items more specifically. This is headline. Animal groups, marine parks release competing captivity polls. Animal rights groups and the marine park industry released dueling public opinion surveys Monday that each of them said depicted national attitudes towards keeping killer whales and other marine mammals in captivity. The competing polls were the latest salvos in a long-running war between activists and Orlando-based SeaWorld Parks and Entertainment, which owns the world's largest population of captive killer whales. The battle has intensified during the past 2 years amid the heightened scrutiny of SeaWorld's killer whale program by federal regulators. In one survey commissioned by the Whale and Dolphin Conservation Society, the Humane Society of the U.S., and the Animal Welfare Institute, respondents were asked whether they supported the practice of keeping killer whales in captivity for display to the public. According to the organizations, 39% said they either strongly or somewhat opposed the practice, while 26% either strongly or somewhat favored it. The organization said the intensity of the responses was significant, as the number of people strongly opposed, 24%, was triple the number strongly in favor, 8%. One-third of those polls said they were undecided. Another key finding the group said was that 71% of respondents said it would make no difference to their decision to visit zoos, aquariums, or quote-unquote marine mammal theme parks in the U.S. if the facilities were to stop holding killer whales. Just 13% said such a change would make them less likely to visit, while 14% said it would make them more likely to visit. The survey follows a bruising 2-year stretch for SeaWorld, whose practices have come under intense scrutiny since the February 2010 death of a trainer at SeaWorld Orlando. The company is currently contesting a citation issued by the U.S. Occupational Safety and Health Administration, which has recommended that trainers never again be allowed to have unprotected contact with killer whales during performances. The public has a glimpse of the darker side of the captivity industry and is becoming disenchanted with it, said Courtney Vale, campaign manager for the Whale and Dolphin Conservation Society. Not so, countered the Alliance of Marine Mammal Parks and Aquariums. That trade association, whose dominant member is SeaWorld, pointed to its survey conducted in February that indicated Americans have far more favorable feelings about the industry. For instance, the Alliance said 91% of respondents to its survey agreed that marine life parks, aquariums, and zoos are either essential or somewhat important to promote environment conservation. 90% said the facilities are essential or somewhat important to rescuing and medically treating animals that they can be returned to the wild. And another 90% somewhat or strongly agreed that interacting with dolphins in a marine life park, aquarium, or zoo offers people a deeper understanding of this mammal. People feel that being able to connect with dolphins, killer whales, beluga whales, and other marine mammals in facilities is important for education and conservation, said Marilyn Menard, executive director of the Alliance. Well, this all hooks in some ways, too, to next week's guest on Talk Animals, David Kirby, award-winning investigative journalist and author whose new book is Death at SeaWorld, Shamu and the Dark Side of Killer Whales in Captivity. Whatever you think of this, wherever you fall on that side of the survey, this book, which I think only actually came out yesterday officially, but it is an amazing achievement. I mean, the reporting, how far and wide this guy has gone into the scientific side of orcas and what goes on in the wild with them, as well as what goes on in captivity, and had tremendous access to all kinds of SeaWorld personnel, obviously mostly former. Anyway, really interesting. I think it'll be a really interesting conversation with him next week on Talking Animals. So, lastly, let's see. I think we're going to jump into the Talking Animals Comic Corner, but I want to quickly just wish happy birthday to Joellen Schilke, WNF's fabulous volunteer and outreach coordinator, It's certainly a rough and challenging year, but let's hope this marks the beginning of a fabulous year. And she's celebrating at a, I think, largely undisclosed location, which involves wizardry of one kind or another. So hats off. Happy birthday, Joelle. And right now, though, let's step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which involves animal-oriented comedy, as always. Picked out a fairly relevant bit for today's show. This is Aaron Foley with a piece called Vegan Cooking for One on today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
I have to travel. I get caught up on my reading because I'm a huge nerd. I love the books. I love the books. I tell you, when you're in a bookstore and you start looking around, there's actually like a lot of depressing books out there, like books on wars. I know, depressing things are hilarious. Books on wars and plagues and poverty. Hilarious. But then I discovered the most depressing book of all time. It's actually in the cooking section. It's called Vegan Cooking for One. That's depressing. No meat, no fish, no dairy, no friends. Screw it. Throw in the towel. The back of the book, it's like, if you love Vegan Cooking for One, you'll love The Bell Jar by Sylvia Plath.
All right. That was Aaron Foley with a piece called Vegan Cooking for One, taken from her album Lower the Bar. I'm Duncan Strauss. This is Talking Animals. Our website is talkinganimals.net. It's nearly time to speak with today's guest, Roberto Martin. As I touched on earlier, Roberto is the personal chef for Ellen DeGeneres and Portia de Rossi and is the author of the new cookbook, Vegan Cooking for Carnivores. Over 125 recipes so tasty you won't miss the meat, which features recipes for dishes he's developed while cooking for Ellen and Portia. So with a reminder that we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing us at dj@wmnf.org. Let's welcome to the show Roberto Martin. Good morning, Roberto.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Really good. Thanks so much for joining us today on Talking Animals.
Oh, it's a pleasure and an honor.
Cool. Well, let's jump in. First of all, congratulations on the book, which of course we'll discuss in some detail shortly. But before we do that, let's find out a little bit about you and the path you traveled to wind up cooking for Ellen and Portia. So let's start with a little bit of history and kind of, because I think, much like myself, I think you had a bit of history in sort of the Orange County, Southern California area, and even I think some of the places that you were first working at were old stomping grounds of mine. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, sort of the very early years that sort of were the beginning part of your path here.
Sure, yeah. No, I started waiting tables to help pay for college, and I really, you know, didn't have aspirations of becoming a chef yet. I'm the youngest of a really big family, the youngest of 15.
Yeah.
And so I did spend a lot of time in the kitchen, but I didn't realize that that was really where my passion was until I just decided, hey, I'm going to, like, leave, you know, El Torito and Acapulco and then go to a nice restaurant where the check averages are higher and the tips are bigger. That was it. And I fell in love with the food. I was working at, you know, some really high-end restaurants in downtown Los Angeles, and I was like, wow, this is awesome. I want to do this. So I graduated from Cal State Fullerton and sold my truck and got some student loans and went to the CIA. And
we should point out that for folks not clear on that, CIA means Culinary Institute of America in this case.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Not to be confused with the other one. I don't think they take me.
Yeah. Well, who knows? But maybe they would.
Yeah. And that was great. And again, I didn't have aspirations of being a personal chef. I was going to do the whole restaurant thing.
Sure.
One thing led to another, and I found myself working as a personal chef, and I realized that this is really what I was supposed to be doing.
And how did that decision, Roberto, how did that, when you sort of finished your training, and obviously then, you know, when that kind of training, there's any number of places that kind of chef can go. So was it still while you were being trained that you said to yourself, hey, you know what, instead of going to restaurant, where at most restaurants I could kind of, you know, walk in based on my training and experience now, I mean, where was it in the process? You know what? Actually, I'm going to go a different direction. I'm going to go the personal chef direction.
Well, it was weird. It was this family found me. They went to the culinary school, and located me and said, you know, we have this place, this house in Malibu, and blah, 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 and we're looking for a personal chef, and we think a culinary graduate would be perfect. And, you know, at the time, my fiance and I were living on my brother's couch, and I was like, I just jumped on it. It was, you know, money in the bank.
Sure.
And it turned out, the funny thing is that this family was horrible.
Oh, really? You mean like awful people, or what do you mean?
Awful people.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. And then what, I stayed there for like 3 months and, you know, got us an apartment and everything. We're on our feet and everything. And then, in the process, I met somebody there who was a personal assistant. And he said, you know, you're good at this. You should, go to these agencies that I had no idea about. So he hooked me up with these agencies, and almost all the agencies took pity on me for having worked for them, because it turns out that they were blacklisted with the agencies, and that's why they went and pulled somebody out of culinary.
Wow. Their reputation as awful people was widespread, apparently.
Oh, totally. It was hysterical. So then one of the agencies said, you know what, you'd be perfect for Maria Shriver. And so, like, 3 days later, I'm interviewing with Arnold and Maria, and I get the job. And so I worked with them for a while, and then I ended up working for Janet and Jerry Zucker. And in the process, I, at somebody else's dime, I was able to retrain myself to cook healthy food. But it still wasn't vegan. In fact, I made fun of vegans. I made fun of the vegan food thing. It wasn't my passion. I thought, what, it's just difficult and,
sure,
you know, an inconvenience and everything. And, but I was able to retrain my, you know, in culinary school, you learn a lot of, heavy cream and butter and,
sure,
and all of these, you know, meals that you would have for a special occasion, but not every day.
Right.
And then I also was, you know, I'm cooking and there's a dog laying in front of me and I'm helping one kid with their homework and the other one's throwing grapes at me. And it was just, I realized that this was what I was supposed to do. I was reliving my childhood in many ways.
Sure.
In a big house, cooking, being a family, sort of being the heart of the home and sort of, you know, I just loved it. It was,
yeah,
there was a lot of love and a lot of beauty going on there. And, so yeah, and then, you know, fast forward, I had worked for, you know, the Tom Cruise. And
yeah, well, I noticed that, and I'm sorry to interrupt, but I mean, this typically isn't really, there's not really a tabloid feel to this show, but I'm happy to make an exception in this case. If there's anything you would like to tell us about your time with, working in the Tom Cruise household.
You know, there's nothing really to tell, to be honest.
Okay.
They were
all right. You're a diplomat, Roberto. I can tell. All right. Cool.
Nice people.
Yeah.
But,
okay.
And I'm scared.
Yeah. Okay. There we go. Now we get to it. Now we get the real truth.
Just
excellent.
Just
kidding.
Yeah. Okay. But, the other thing is that, the little tiny door in me opened up, in November. I started working for Ellen and Portia in January. And it was, our anniversary. We went to a really nice restaurant, my wife and I, and, they had foie gras on the menu, and I just looked at her and I was like, you know, I there's no need for, I'm not gonna cook foie gras anymore. I'm not gonna do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And veal is not really, you know, it's not something that, it's not something that really makes or breaks a dish either. And
sure.
And I remember that only because I feel like it was like a tiny little door in me that opened up to allow this other way of thinking in.
Mm-hmm.
So when the opportunity to work for Ellen and Portia came up, I took it as a challenge. The fact that they were vegan, I looked at it the same way any other job had said in the past. You know, my husband doesn't like peppers and we don't like onions.
Mm-hmm.
But we, you know, I mean, I had the request, we love onion soup, we don't like onions. You know, so
okay.
Kind of making French soup and straining it. So, okay, so you know what? They love everything. We love everything, except we don't eat, you know, animal products.
Right.
You know? And that's how I took the challenge. And they had already had some people cooking for them and interviewed people who were vegan chefs, who were also life coaches or yogis or, you know,
mm-hmm.
whatever. And
yeah.
They're like, we just want some grub, you know, we don't, you know,
right. Yeah.
We just want food. And so, this approach was really good for both of us. And my approach was just first thing I did was cook the food that were staples of mine that everybody always liked, pulled out the animal products and replaced it with plant-based proteins.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't think it was a big deal. They flipped because they were like, this is what we were looking for. We were looking for food that was similar to the old food we liked, but that just didn't have the animals in it. And
the life coach was never making dishes like this, I'm guessing.
No, it was a lot of lentil patties and things like that, which they just weren't into. And you know, we graduated to that. And, you know, Monday through Friday, we would, you know, I would make some foods that were similar to that. But when they had a guest over, when they had somebody over that was just sort of leaning towards maybe I'll go vegan,
mm-hmm.
they wanted these kinds of foods that were like, you know, the vegan sliders or hamburger spring rolls and stuff like that.
For sure.
And then they started coming to me with requests. Like Ellen said, you know, I used to love red beans and rice. That was my thing. You know? And I came up with this awesome recipe for red beans and rice. And so it was exciting for me, too, because I had been cooking at that point for about 10 years.
Yeah.
And I was kind of spinning my wheels a little bit on, there's only so many different ways you can do, you know, braised short ribs.
Mm-hmm.
Like
yeah.
And so this was like a whole new chapter in cooking and challenges for me that kept me on my toes. And so it really rejuvenated me as well. So
that's cool. It sounds like the perfect kind of challenge at the perfect moment for where you were career-wise and sort of where you had been, and that you really rose to that challenge and really kind of were invigorated by it.
Thanks. Yeah, that's exactly what happened.
Yeah. Well, cool. Let me let folks know this is Talking Animals. If you just tuned in, we're speaking with Chef Roberto Martin, whose new cookbook is Vegan Cooking for Carnivores, over 125 recipes. So tasty, you won't miss the meat. If you'd like to ask Roberto a question or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663 or email dj@wmnf.org. So yeah, at least as Portia kind of describes things in her foreword to your book, the challenges of sort of, they were sort of on the cusp, as you say, they kind of just started down, I think, the vegan path probably before you teamed up with them. But they were obviously serious about it, and so it sounds like, again, like you were sort of a revelation to them, like, hey, this is the kind of food that we can eat, you know, under the vegan umbrella. So take this back a little bit, because I know a part of that sort of process was requests that they made, like things that they liked either growing up or liked even now, that, you know, they were saying, hey, Roberto, can you make a cool vegan version of this?
Yeah, one time they came to me and they were like, you know, we miss caviar. We used to just have, like, you know, a couple appetizers, champagne, and caviar, that we'd have that for dinner. And I was like, well, that's a cute story. Well, what am I supposed to do about that?
Yeah, good luck.
Yeah, right. And I came up with this dish. It's using beluga lentils and soaking them in a salty brine with some seaweed, and they're great, you know, they turn out really good. So then I served them on a little bellini and you know, that old school creme fraiche thing, which was just a little bit of mayonnaise and miso paste, they flipped, they loved them, and that became a staple too, is these little caviar bellinis with a little champagne or something, and it does the trick, you know. They're salty and all those different flavor combinations are going on right there.
Sure. Well, also too, I mean, just in that description and really a lot of sort of the book, both just inherent to some of the recipes, but also some of the things where you're explaining certain recipes or sort of how certain recipes came about. There's really kind of this fundamental facet kind of here seems to be this idea of substitution. Maybe you could explain a little bit about that notion and the key elements for assessing how best to make a substitution on a recipe, converting it successfully to a vegan dish.
Sure. Yeah. No. That's really what I really want to get across to people, is that it's not a completely new kind of cooking, and you don't have to get rid of your old cookbooks. Basically, you want to just substitute the proteins first. And figure out what kind you like to eat and what kind work best for the dish. So, you know, firm tofu is great if you squeeze out all the liquid out of it. Tempeh works great as well. And then sometimes if the dish has enough vegetables, just skip it all together, you know?
Yeah.
Just skip it. And like, for example, pizza, we do cheeseless pizza all the time, and it's awesome. You know, peppers and tomatoes and things like that with a good crust. It doesn't really need it. Pesto and stuff like that. But there's other dishes that you want to just sort of complement your vegetables with the protein, and not try to complement your protein with your vegetables.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of it's about the approach and sort of what the emphasis can and should be, so that the whole dish and the meal turns out, you know, to be really delicious and hit kind of the criteria at the same time.
Yeah, yeah. One of the things that Portia used to love growing up was shepherd's pie.
Mm-hmm.
And I made a shepherd's pie with the like Boca crumbles, you know,
yeah,
instead of the ground beef, and she loved that. And this is the kind of thing that I could see, you know, a family doing, which is, you know, you throw that at them, and they don't really notice the difference. And then they like the dish so much that you know, eventually you graduate to replacing the Boca crumbles with some lentils. And a little bit of red wine, and you reduce it, and it has a real, you know, a meaty flavor, and then it has the mashed potatoes on top, and then nothing's really missed, you know?
Sure.
Sort of a gradual approach.
Well, that's cool, because it also sounds like, you know, you're all also mindful, whether it's specifically for Ellen and Portia or others maybe that come over to the house more regularly, about, like, sort of the evolution of a dish, because it sounds like the shepherd's pie that you made initially for Portia, because she really, like, loved that, you know, did have the Boca crumbles, and then when you did kind of substitute the lentils, did she comment? Did she notice? Did she say anything?
Well, she said she liked it even more. I thought
okay.
She was going to be, you know, she said she liked it even more, so, and I was like, oh, awesome, there you go.
Very
you
cool, know? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it is cool, and I'm often picturing, you know, mom or dad trying to go vegan, and then, you know, dad's not really into it. And the best, or the kids, you know, and the best way to sell that is to make something you've made in the past.
Sure.
That they all like.
Right. Familiar.
And then, yeah, totally familiar. The flavor combinations are familiar. And then, you know, you flip it, and most of the time they're not going to even notice, and if they do notice, they're still going to like it.
Sure. Well, I have a comment on that, but let's take one of our callers here and get them involved in the conversation. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Roberta Martin. Hello? It's you.
Hello?
Hello, it's you. Do you have a question or comment for Roberto?
No, I was kind of got a request.
Okay, fire away.
Anything off of the Animals album by Pink Floyd.
Okay. All right. That's not kind of the request I thought you meant. Sorry. Okay. So Roberto, what you were just saying, in fact, last night, partly, you know, we tried to, you know, a number of dishes, from the book in sort of preparation for speaking to you today. So last night we had the chicken pot pie, and, my 8-year-old, you know, dug in heartily, and I, you know, we didn't say anything about, you know, what the chicken or how even in this case the chicken is spelled, and he loved it.
Nice. Yeah.
And
awesome. And that's the whole plan. And the book was really written for people to embrace eating less meat. And if that means you're not going to adopt a vegan diet, that's fine, you know, but if you're going to, like, you know, have a vegetarian or a vegan dish 3 nights a week, that's a huge impact.
Right.
You know, only 5% of America is vegetarian, 1% is vegan. But 47% of America has polled that they would be interested in eating a vegetarian dish at least once a week.
Sure.
So that's a lot of people. And if all 47% of them were able to do that conveniently, you know, that would have a big impact on the amount of animals being consumed.
Right.
And you know, the truth of the matter is, and this is a twist that I don't think people get, is that if less animals were consumed, even those that are never going to give up eating animals, their beef and chicken would improve. The quality of it would improve, you know?
Right.
The price might go up a little bit, but that's okay, you know? We should pay a lot for beef and chicken and fish. That's, you know, 99-cent ground beef is the problem, you know?
Right. Well, and again, part of that, of course, is the tremendous environmental cost that goes in, you know, producing that kind of beef and chicken, too.
Yeah, huge. And I don't think that preparing any of that environmental cost is being rolled into the price either.
Right.
You know, I mean, nobody scuffs at lobster. Nobody says, you know, lobster should be cheaper or anything like that. We sort of like, if you go out to eat lobster, it's a treat, you know, you're going to pay, you know, at least $20 for lobster or $40 in a restaurant or something like that. But when it comes to beef, we expect to go to a chain restaurant and get, you know, a 12-ounce piece of meat for $9.99. It doesn't really compute, you know?
Yeah.
And if we were paying $39.99 at a restaurant for that piece of beef, then, you know, maybe the entire animal would be treated with a great deal of value.
Right.
You know.
Right. Yeah. It would sort of alter the whole kind of, you know, balance and dynamics of looking at how that,
for sure.
Yeah. So again, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Trust. My guest is Roberto Martin, who's written a new cookbook, Vegan Cooking for Carnivores. His experience and recipes for the book came from serving as a personal chef to Ellen DeGeneres and Portia de Rossi. And again, we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing us at dj@wmnf.org. Let's take another one of our callers. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Roberto Martin.
Hey, Duncan. This is Vinny Scully from Clearwater, though I'm driving north to Ocala, and it's a great show.
Oh, thanks, Vinny.
Thank you very much. I'm just running out of the transmittal zone, so I'm glad to be able to listen on my phone as well. And Chef Martin, thank you for coming on. It's wonderfully informative. I'm a 19-H graduate of the Culinary Institute as well, and I love my alma mater, and what you've done is great, particularly for a guy like me who's not cooking anymore, but my tastes run to a lot of meat, and it's hard to justify it. Like Duncan was just talking about the incredible environmental cost of consumption of animals as opposed to vegetables, vegetarian and vegan cuisine, which, you know, even if you just use some of these recipes as garnishes, you know, it's a wonderful thing to add. And like you said, adding protein to your vegetables as opposed to the other way around. But I wanted to ask you a question specifically about plant estrogens and the overuse of tofu. There's a lot of research has been coming out about, you know, too much consumption of tofu. And when it seems like it's a great base for the vegan cuisine, what do you use to substitute tofu product?
Thanks, Vinny.
Thank you very much, and thanks for your kind words. I don't make excuses for tofu. I think it's fantastic. I don't necessarily agree with some of the reports in regards to the estrogen levels and things. One of the things is that tofu is a fermented form of the soybean, and the estrogen levels are really high when you consume the soybean unfermented. I want to emphasize, number one, that I'm not a scientist, but I have done some research, and, you know, some of these research exposés are funded by different individuals, like the Dairy Council and other places that sort of get results that they're looking for. And I don't think that soy really is as dangerous as we've been taught. I don't see a lot of, you know, Chinese and Japanese people running around with man boobs. And, I don't see, you know, this androgynous thing going on. And the truth is that as long as you're consuming a normal amount, you're not waking up with, soybeans and tofu for lunch and dinner, some tofu, as your main source of protein at dinner, I think is perfectly fine, and I wouldn't steer away from it.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
Well, again, like anything else, I guess moderation and in terms of some of those studies, just like we, in our little news segment before you came on, Roberto, we had a sort of a story about two conflicting surveys about, in this case, marine animal parks. So one, you know, of course, was commissioned by SeaWorld or related group, and one was commissioned by people who obviously are against captive mammals. So surprised they came up with very different results. So again, you have to really look carefully, as always, at the sources of some of those findings and research studies to before you can really make any kind of an important conclusion from them. But
you have to take them with a grain of salt. Somewhere in the middle is usually the truth, I think.
Sure.
The other thing about that is that just friggin' tofu's just so friggin' awesome, you know?
Yeah. In the right hands, like your hands, it is friggin' awesome, probably, no doubt. So I'm hoping to come over for dinner one of these days. But anyway, let me ask you that. In fact, Roberto, is so to what extent is your work sort of cooking for Ellen and Portia affected how you and your family eat at home, like on a day off or a night off? I mean, what do you guys eat at your house?
It's funny because. My wife does all the cooking because by the time I get home, it'd be too late,
Plus, you've put in your shift cooking anyway, man. Yeah.
My son's very open to pretty much everything. He is 100% dairy free. Mm-hmm. We've seen that's been really advantageous as far as his asthma goes. And my wife is relatively vegetarian. But she eats whatever she wants,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't really come up that often.
Sure.
Like, they'll be mostly vegetarian, and then maybe he'll have some chicken strips or something like that or whatever. But or he won't. He'll just have, he's a huge dumpling head. Like, the guy loves dumplings.
Okay,
You can always feed him dumplings and know you're safe. So, and then I'll come home on a day off. If we go out to eat, we'll usually get the vegetarian option, but
mm-hmm.
we know that, and I'm quick to say that I'm not 100% vegan because, look, if you go out to eat and you get the soup or whatever, it's going to have a little chicken stock in it or something like
mm-hmm.
that, or you might even alter the menu and tell them that you're vegan and the odds that you're getting a 100% vegan dish. I don't know. I've worked in a kitchen many times before, and I think that they're few and far between. So
it's
sort of a leap of faith. You understand you're going to eat out, and you might be eating some animal products. So that's the way I look at it. But for the most part, we're about 95% vegetarian.
Gotcha.
Slash vegan, yeah.
Cool. Well, we're sort of in the last few minutes. Let's see if we can take at least one more call. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Roberto Martin.
Hi, my name is Curtis.
Hi,
and I have more of a comment than a question. Chef, I love the show, and I bought your cookbook a few weeks ago. And besides the great recipes, I've learned so much about different products that are available, like the Better Than Bouillon stuff. The only thing I'm having a problem finding is the vegan Parmesan cheese, but everything has been pretty easy, and the recipes are terrific, and I thank you for doing this book.
Thank you so, so much. It's the neatest thing for me. I've never done a cookbook before. And the fact that, like, somebody I've never met before, a perfect stranger, is enjoying my recipes, I just get the biggest kick out of. I thank you so much.
And thank you very much for that caller. But that does bring me to a question, because one of the things sort of that, I mean, there's so many cool pieces of information, beyond the recipes themselves, sort of throughout the book. And the caller's comment does remind me that sort of early on in the book, the first few pages, there is kind of a list, brand name vegan products. Now, have you found, I don't know if you've heard this, as you've either done interviews like this or traveled around, but are some of these things kind of more available regionally and not necessarily nationally? Like she mentioned something that she couldn't find. There's a handful of things that you mentioned, in your sort of brand name vegan product list, and some, of course, are pretty universal, but some do you find that people are having some trouble in certain parts of the country locating some of those?
No, actually, I'm ecstatic about that because my in-laws are from Missouri, and they were sort of my my go-to people. I'd be like, go to the supermarket, can you find this? And if
sure.
you can't, I didn't put it in. There's actually some brand name vegan products that I prefer, that I love.
Yeah.
But I know they're only available in my local Whole Foods, right?
Okay. Yeah.
And it's just pointless for me to put those in the book.
Right.
So I went way out of my way to recommend stuff that can be found universally. That's why I'm a big proponent of Gardein. Because it's coast to coast, it's
sure.
everywhere.
Yeah. Well, that was certainly the source of our chicken for our chicken pot pie just
right.
last night. Yeah, for sure.
That's terrific.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to really make sure that no matter where you were in the country that you bought this book, that you could achieve this by, you know, being able to find some of these things. And I know, and sometimes I use words like, you know, sort of ground meat substitute, because I don't know what they're going to find, but they're going to find something. You know,
yeah.
it's either going to
yeah.
be that the PVP, or it's going to be, you know, Boca crumbles or something like that.
Sure.
And so I didn't want to hang up anybody too much on particular labels. And then I wrote, you know, but if you can find this particular label, I can tell you it's pretty good stuff, you know.
Sure.
But like Daya cheese is pretty much coast to coast. And if it's not, then there's Follow Your Heart. And if there's not, then I'm sure there's something else that your supermarket will carry.
Yeah.
And the other thing about the vegan farm was the only one that I wasn't 100% sure, but the great thing about it is that we have yeast. You know, you can use brewer's yeast or nutritional yeast
sure.
as a farm substitute, and that's available at any health food store.
Very cool. Well, so again, this kind of brings us all the way back almost to the whole idea of substitution. And again, there's a lot of stuff in the book about, you know, how to approach that and just sort of break down recipes and sort of, you know, make your substitutions kind of accordingly based on what you're going for. And again, what ingredients are available on hand. So, cool. Well, Roberto, I think we are just about out of time at this point. But, again, we've been speaking with Roberto Martin. And, again, he has, his new, cookbook is called Vegan Cooking for Carnivores, over 125 recipes, so tasty you won't miss the meat. And I'm sure there's been more than a few wags, Roberto, that have pointed out that there's gorgeous photographs throughout the book. And of course, the photographer's last name is Bacon, so that's kind
that's
of
right.
a cool thing. Yeah, but anyways, great book, available anywhere you get your books. And Roberto, thanks so much for making the time to join us at Talking Animals. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, and thank you so much for having me on.
Absolutely. Good luck. Thanks again.
Take care, buddy.
Bye-bye. All right, I'm Duncan Strauss. You're listening to Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to name that animal tune. This is a giveaway. You do not need to be a WMNF member to win. And there'll be a prize, a copy indeed, of Vegan Cooking for Carnivores, the new book, of course, we've just been discussing with Roberto Martin. To the first person who calls in the correct title of this animal tune, 813-239-9663. It's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals. We'll come back and finish up with a few animal news and especially announcements of things coming up this weekend. It's WMNF, it's Talking Animals. Here's our Name That Animal Tune. That's right. Who is this?
Barbara Rosenthal.
I'm sorry?
Barbara Rosenthal.
Okay, Barbara, that is correct.
I'm so excited. Yay.
Okay, cool. That is indeed Hummingbird. And we will come back and get your information and send you off a copy of Vegan Cooking for Carnivores by Roberto Martin.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
All right, we'll just put you on hold for a few minutes.
Okay,
thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks. Okay, folks, we do have a winner, and thanks to all those others. Looks like plenty of people knew based on all the lines, phone lines being lit, so Barbara was the first. So anyway, I want to tell you about a few things coming up that we didn't have time for in the first part of the Animal News and Announcement segment, including a really cool pet portrait fundraiser happening this weekend, July 20, 21, 22 in Largo. And it's to benefit the Golden Retriever Rescue of Southwest Florida. So photography specialist Rebecca Britton will take your dog photos. It doesn't have to be dogs, but that's kind of what this is mainly about. I can't say the price of the donation, but very reasonable. Somewhere between zero and, let's say, $100. Somewhere in the middle of that, probably. Anyways, you get a private in-studio photo session for your pets or people and or 30-minute personal image review session a few days later, and a credit toward a print collection or digital collection. So go to Rebecca Britton, R-E-B-E-C-C-A, Britton, Britton.com, or call 727-709-2260 to make your reservations or find out more. And again, this would benefit the folks at the Golden Retriever Rescue of Southwest Florida. So, and let's see, speaking of vegan things, Loving Hut is having their third anniversary this Saturday, also July 21st, at the restaurant. And so congratulations to them. They're at 1905 East Fletcher Avenue right here in Tampa. Their phone is 813-977-7888 for details about the celebration brunch. And and there's also dog massage being offered, or techniques to learn it, this also this Saturday, the 21st. Massage techniques can help alter behavior, improve well-being, and influence the relationship between dogs and their humans. Just bring your dog and proof of rabies vaccination. You can register online at spctampabay.org, and that's also where you can find out more information. So I think that's going to get us largely caught up for now, and we have pretty much just about reached the end of this edition of Talking Animals. We'll be back next Wednesday, July 25th, as I mentioned earlier in the show. Our guest will be David Kirby, journalist, author, formerly a regular contributor to the New York Times, and author most recently of Death at SeaWorld, Shamu and the Dark Side of Killer Whales in Captivity, a dazzling journalistic achievement. One of my favorite books all year. I mean, animal-related, talk animals-related, or just generally. Really, really well done. Anyway, I hope you'll join me next week for that. I also hope you'll visit our website, talkinganimals.net, where we make available all sorts of information, as well as archives and podcasts of past Talking Animals programs. We also have a link to the Talking Animals Facebook page, our Twitter feed, and more. Please like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. It's all found at talkinganimals.net. Doc Animals Broadcast Outreach Consultant is Libby Basalis. My thanks to her. And thanks very much for listening. I'm Duncan Strauss. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. And if you want more talking information, just switch to our digital channel, 88.5 HD3. The Tom Hartman Show starts up at noon on WMF.org/HD. Or stay tuned for the wonderful Scott Elliott and the All Souls edition of It's the Music, airing next from noon to 3. And we're closing out today's show with an animal song, of course. This one from Iguanas, doing a wonderful version of El Orangutan, taking us up to the NPR News on WNF Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota, Bradenton. Thanks for listening. Speak again next Wednesday at 11 a.m. on Talking Animals. Stay tuned for Scott on to the NPR News. El orangutan, y la orangutana, el orangutan, y la orangutana. El orangután y la orangutana, el orangután y la orangutana. Esta vez el orangután meciéndose en una rama. Esta vez el orangután meciéndose en una rama. Llegó la orangutana y le cogió la banana. Llegó la orangutana. Thank you.
esparciéndose en una rama. Llegó la orangutana y le cogió la banana. Llegó la orangutana y le cogió la banana. Y la orangután y la orangutana.
NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The White House is cracking its round.